In the pressure cooker of the NBA playoffs, there's no room to fake it.
Every pass, shot, and dribble is immediately consequential.
The playoffs are the time for the real.
Real stakes, real emotions, real sweat, blood, and tears, real legacies.
Which teams will rise from the chaos? Which teams will conquer?
Which team is going to make this year their year?
You already know when and where to find these moments of unscripted, pure entertainment.
Don't miss 1 minute of the action. Tune into the NBA playoffs on ESPN and ABC.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us, wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk? Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't give Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar 20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
Moments like my daughter telling me a new joke mean a lot to me. But after being diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer, or MBC, which is breast cancer that has spread to other parts of the body, they mean even more. I take Ibrance, palbociclib.
Ibrance 125 milligram tablets with an aromatase inhibitor is for adults with HR positive HER2 negative MBC as the first hormonal-based therapy. Ask your doctor about Ibrance and visit Ibrance.com. Ibrance may cause low white blood cell counts that may lead to serious infections. Ibrance may cause severe inflammation of the lungs. Both of these can lead to death. Tell your doctor right away if you have new or worsening symptoms, including trouble breathing, shortness of breath, cough, or chest pain. Before taking Ibrance, tell your doctor if you have fever, chills, or other signs of infection, liver or kidney problems, are or plan to become pregnant, or are breastfeeding. Common side effects include low red blood cell and low platelet counts, infections, tiredness, nausea, sore mouth, abnormalities in liver blood tests, diarrhea, hair thinning or loss, vomiting, rash, and loss of appetite.
Well, all right, y'all. All across the USC, Compton, Watts, Bay to LA, Pomona, California, from valley to valley, we represent that killer Cali. So if you keeping it real on your side of your town, you tune in to Gangsta Chronicles.
Gangsta Chronicles, we gon' tell you how it goes.
If I lie, my nose will grow like Pinocchio. We gon' tell you the truth and nothing but the truth.
Gangsta Chronicles, this is not your average show.
You're now tuned into the real MCA, Big James, and Big Stale.
This is strictly from the streets.
Hello.
We represent the James.
Where are you at? This is OG Gangsta Granny, and the Gangsta Chronicles podcast is back in effect. Get ready for some of that G shit.
Welcome to the Gangsta Chronicles podcast, a production of iHeartRadio and Black Effect Podcast Network. Make sure you download the iHeart app and subscribe to the Gangsta Chronicles. For my Apple users, hit the purple mic on your front screen, subscribe to the Gangsta Chronicles, and leave a 5-star rating and comment.
We'd like to welcome everyone to another episode of the Gangsta Chronicles podcast. Now, we are moving and shaking and actually working on our new TV show that we got, the Gangsta Chronicles, where we're going to be traveling all around the world doing some of everything, you know? We're dropping this interview, one of many that we got in the vault. Now, this one is with Mr. Mix from the infamous 2 Live crew. We touched on a lot of things, man, to find out how Scarface almost wound up on Luke Records, man, of all things. Check this out. We'll be back at y'all next week.
What's up with you, bro?
What's up, brother? What's going on, man? I'm up here trying to put something on my dome, man. Let me put this on real quick. Let me put this hat
man,
on.
Man, nothing wrong with your hat, man. What's up with y'all, man? Y'all cats, y'all got to get dugged up and everything, man. We just having a conversation.
Shit, this conversation is going worldwide. You got to look like you something.
Oh, for sure. Well, you know, Hobbs, man, one of the things I like to do, man, is just really bring the people those behind-the-scenes conversations that we be having, man. And me and you talk a lot. You know, the 2 Live crew, pretty much, man, y'all laid the foundation, and I don't think you guys get enough credit, man, for what you actually done. You actually, you know, through you guys' actions, you made it possible for people to be out here saying some of the crazy stuff that they're saying nowadays, because it is a freedom of speech.
Yeah, well, you know, the thing about it is that, you know, if we were in New York or in Los Angeles, there would be a gang of footage on us. There would be more publicity people involved. There would be more journalists involved. You know, Miami was, you know, off the, you know, was outside of the grid of what was known to be the grid back in those days. There was nobody here in Miami to really archive it in a way to where it would be sufficiently archived. People wasn't really coming from New York, and people wasn't coming from California to check out what our vibe was. We was kind of like on Fantasy Island, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's a situation to where it's still almost kind of like folklore and mystery to a lot of people. Even when I met you, you really didn't know to what the degree was or what, you know, you knew about the group, but outside of me telling you some, you know, things, you really didn't know what was what outside of the records. You know what I mean? You didn't really have a true understanding of why this stuff became what it became or any of that. So there's a gang of people that, you know, that's in that zone. They don't know anything.
Hey, before we go further, let me shout out some of the people that's in the room. Shout out to Caramel King 20,000, Christopher Green, Eric Blake, Gangsta Mac, rest in peace, Fresh Kid Ice, word. Eric Blake, rest in peace, Fresh Kid Ice, word. Gangsta Mac, pioneers of Florida, Miami hip hop, for sure. And we gonna get into it. One of the things, Hobbs, I mean, call you Hobbs by your government name, one of the names mixed.
And it don't matter, my shit is, my name is on all the songwriting. They'll see Hobbs. You can say Mixed, though, whichever.
All right, so people, when I call him Hobbs, don't get confused. That's what I call him by his last name. That's what we do. We go back, what, Hobbs, like maybe 25 years?
Yeah.
About 25 years, man. I met Hobbs when I was a kid.
It's been that long?
Yeah, it's been that long, though. It's been that long, man. You met me. I was still an artist. You know what I mean? I was an artist at the time. Yeah, I was a young cat.
Your son wasn't even, I mean, I don't even know if he was born yet when I met you.
No, he wasn't born yet. Christopher wasn't here. Stefan, my oldest son, was here.
Right,
my daughter.
Yeah, he was, but the other one.
Yeah, the other two wasn't, man. They came a lot later on. Came a little later on, you know?
Right.
Came a little later on. But, you know, one of the things, I want to go back to that hospice. That's pivotal at the beginning. A lot of people don't know that you're actually from Riverside, California.
Yeah, well, that's where I was stationed at in the military in Riverside. I'm originally from Santa Ana, California. I was born and raised there, went from elementary to junior high there. And right when I was about to start up high school, our family relocated to Corona. When Corona ain't what Corona is now, Corona was only had maybe 20,000 people in it and maybe 50 black people. And our family was 5 of the 50.
And so, you know, not to breeze too much through the history. I know we got limited time, and we could talk, you know, if we told the whole story, we'd be here all night. You know what
right,
I mean?
Right.
So you left from there and you went to the military, right? And that's when you discovered like your love for hip hop.
Yeah, well, you know, the funny thing about it, when I went into the service, there was no such thing as hip hop on the West Coast. It was going on maybe back East. We didn't have any understanding about mixing and scratching or any of that stuff, even though that stuff was going on in the late 70s, you know, in New York City. The only way that I got put up on it was by being from California, went into the military in 81 and got stationed in England, where a lot of people from London, they was more in tune to what was going on in New York than what Californians were.
So a big shout out to the UK. A lot of people don't really give those guys over there their credit for what in hip hop, but they was around the beginning.
Right, exactly.
They were there from the beginning.
They definitely, all of the stuff like Blondie and different other little records that came from the UK, they was part of the movement to make it become what it actually became, because a lot of the guys from New York would come over to London to DJ and you know, spread the culture, the break dancers, they would all come to London. You know, they was coming to London before they was coming to California.
That's crazy, man. So you out there in London, the UK, and that's when you first, I know you got your drum machine out there. You got the 808 out there, right?
Well, I got a 606 drum machine from, I was over there. Now, one thing I will say is that LA was deep into the pop locking and, all of that stuff. So I went out, when I got stationed there, there was some other young dudes that was at the military high school for Americans. You know, they seen me pop locking at this one situation, and we all got together and formed a group. And what happened is we actually entered this contest in London, and we got second place, and we won $600 worth of music equipment. And out of that money, I was able to get this Roland 606 drum machine, which, you know, is funny because it programs the same way as an 808 drum machine. So I learned on that, but the 808 drum machine was way too expensive back in those days to purchase. But I knew how to operate it by going to some of the music stores and tinkering around with it and this, that, and the other. So I was way ahead of a lot of people that was outside of New York City. You know, because like I said, most of the guys, it was like tri-state area, you know, New York, New Jersey, Philadelphia, Connecticut. That's kind of what the little circle was. I don't know how it was in Cleveland, you know, but I know that, you know, in those days, it was very foreign. And it was really interesting to me of how I was seeing it being done in front of me.
Yeah, you know, the thing about it, you bring up the 606 and the 808, a lot of sounds that are still used heavily to this day, you know, Mustard, a lot of the different drill and trap music, you know, it's pretty much in every music right now, right, in every musical genre. And I always tell people that you will always be engraved in my head as the king of the bass, because to me, you are the one that kind of formulated that sound.
Yeah, there was guys in Florida that was trying to make records based off of records that was already hits. It was like, I guess kind of like sound-alike records. So if somebody, they would make a record like Trans Europe Express, there was a guy that made a record called Bass Rock Express, where it was, the bass kick drum and all of this other stuff, but it was basically Trans Europe Express being done, you know, from a bass standpoint. So mm-hmm. you had a couple of those records around, but it wasn't really no particular artist. It was like studio guys that was doing these types of things. So when I got out there and, when Luke was doing what he was doing with the, mobile DJ thing, the ghetto style DJs, they was playing music from all over the place. But then, a lot of the stuff that they was also playing was Caribbean stuff, stuff that's played on the different islands, Calypso, this, that, and the other, whatever. So there's a combo of me taking those Calypso sounds and different other little things along with the drum machines that I had, and made the hybrid into what people know as Miami bass now. Even the guys that was there wasn't doing it the way that I put it together.
Mm-hmm. Okay, when did you realize that y'all was on to something? Because by this time, we're not going to go into the whole formulation of the group. Not now.
Right.
But when did you know that you guys had something?
Well, we knew that we had something when we did the Throw the D song. And basically, the Throw the D song is based off of the fact of, us as Two Live Crew and Luke as the ghetto style DJs, we collaborated on this one record. So, Luke then wasn't making no records. They was just doing parties. They weren't mm-hmm. making no music at all. So what I did, there was this one record called Dance to the Drummer's Beat that they would play at the height of the party, and people would go wild and crazy over that record. And I hadn't, like I say, being from California, there's a lot of stuff that's going on back east in Florida. You haven't heard any of these records before. So when I seen that, I took the Dance to the Drummer's Beat and put it along with, my drums off the 808 drum machine. And there was a dance that there was called Throw the D, the Throw the D dance. And that's what Fresh Kid Ice wrote his lyrics based on what it was that he was seeing them do, how they was doing the dance. So it was, once we did that and we seen that, you know, when we played it, you know, at that time we had a cassette player to be able to play it through the system and how people reacted to it. But none of the record companies that was in Miami at that time wanted to take the record. Luke took his own money from what he was doing with the parties and got up enough records pressed to be able to give to the local record pool, and it took off from that point.
Mm. So what was the first spot? Do you remember the first place you guys toured? And I'm pretty sure quite naturally it was the South. You guys probably started in that little like Miami, Atlanta triangle that everybody tours around, right?
Yeah, well, in back in those days, Atlanta was like, you know, if you remember that movie, they talk, you know, the autobiography of Bugsy Siegel, when he jumped out of the car and was looking at looking at all of that dirt in Vegas and envisioned having Las Vegas.
Yeah.
That's kind of how Atlanta was. There was nothing. When I mean nothing in Atlanta, I mean no thing. You know, it was Miami was the thing and was the place that everybody was wanting to try to be involved with. And the funny thing about Atlanta back in those days, it was so many people that was from New York and Chicago coming down there for those jobs that people was trying to emulate New Yorkers and emulate people from Chicago and all of that stuff in Atlanta. Atlanta really didn't have no particular hip-hop identity. It was almost like, you know, it's like the locals, almost lightweight, didn't exist.
Yeah, well, Atlanta really didn't start getting their identity, man, I would say probably until, like, some of the earlier guys, like in the late 90s, like, they had a couple of rap groups. I forget these guys' names, man, from the South. But anyway, they started kind of formulating their own local little hip-hop scene out there. You know, and then when the Goody Mobs and the, you know,
yeah,
what I'm saying?
Outkast, when L.A. Came. Reid and Babyface and them set up shop out there. That's when Atlanta started getting their identity. Them along with Jermaine Dupri. You know, a lot of people don't know that Jermaine Dupri's dad was a music lawyer along with a record promoter.
His dad had some pull. And Ghetto Mafia. Shout out to Ghetto Mafia.
All of that stuff, that was like late 90s and all of that stuff.
Because they were definitely the first group that I heard coming out of Atlanta. And I was like, okay, Atlanta started kind of picking up their little vibe from there. Then, you know, you heard the bass records. I know they were very heavily influenced by bass because the early records that Lil Jon did, when Lil Jon was working with Jermaine Dupri, a lot of people don't know that he was doing the Miami bass records.
Right. He was, kind of had him like handcuffed a little bit. Jermaine didn't really, they had the So-So Def Bass All-Stars thing, but I don't know how much of that stuff, Jon actually was able to put his hands on. I know that he worked in the office for Jermaine. I don't know if he really did tracks or anything like that, because most of the time, it was Jermaine Dupri's show, him and his dad's show. You know, all of the stuff that Criss Cross did, Jermaine Dupri wrote all their lyrics. I don't know how much stuff, how much he was involved with doing the stuff with the Brat. I know that he did the music and this and that, and they did remixes for Biggie Smalls and all them. But it still wasn't no Atlanta identity. Still, it was just a cat in Atlanta that was doing hip hop that was competitive. It wasn't no so-called Atlanta swagger. Yeah, that hadn't showed up yet. It was just some guys in Atlanta that was doing some stuff.
For sure. So that was one of you guys' big markets. Now tell me this, this is the conversations we have. What was the reception back east when you guys first went out there?
We never really went to New York outside of the new music seminars, things like that. They had to respect us in the seminars because our records were selling so much. We was almost kind of like the talk of the seminars because we was, this is before Ruthless became what they became. We were, on the East Coast, we were the only people that was challenging Def Jam, even though we wasn't trying to challenge them, but it's just our stuff was just very different. And, we couldn't be denied based on how much product was being sold.
Not to cut you off, because you couldn't be denied, y'all was selling a gang of records back then.
Right, exactly.
when did the trickeration come in with the lights being turned off and the microphones being shut off and all that stuff? Was that on the road in general?
Yeah. That basically, you know, a lot of people don't understand that Russell Simmons and them, you know, they controlled all of them. They managed pretty much all of the acts in New York. So when the tours would go out, either it was a Public Enemy tour, or it was a Run DMC tour, or it was an Eric B. and Rakim tour, he managed all of the groups. So they would send stage managers out to Debo the situations at all of the different venues.
You said Debo the situation.
Right. Basically, they'd say, yeah, you guys got 10 minutes to do your show. If you're not done in 10 minutes, we're going to turn the lights on. We're going to turn off your music. You know, they were just being extra with the people that was either a local act or somebody that had maybe a little record bubbling in the market that they was at. They was, you know, it was just they get down. It was their thing. They could, you know, they were trampling over everybody.
And just for the record, it just wasn't the Two Live Crew that this was happening to. This was happening to Cube. This was happening to NWA cats. It's a whole lot of people that come out of there with the same stories.
Right, exactly. Same shit, right.
You know, so did any confrontations ever come from this? Because I know y'all at that time, Luke and them had a kind of a reputation for putting hands on folks.
Yeah, we had some issues out there. And there was this one time, you know, me and, you know, back in the day, I never used to go to the radio interviews. I would be there setting my turntables up and setting up, you know, the lights and all that stuff with our show situation. So one of these guys, you know, saying, hey, man, we see that you guys got some lights and we see that you guys have a backdrop. You can only put up one or the other. You can't put up both.
And y'all was a major group. And that's the thing, y'all a major group, right?
Right. We mm-hmm. selling as much records, and the show was in the South. It was like in Savannah, Georgia or some shit. Some place where we were real strong at. Mm-hmm. So me and the road manager dude, we had the swing on dude. We was beating the dude and this, that, and the other. And then when Luke and them finally get there and heard about what happened, they jumped on the dude some more. So it's like, you know, we weren't really looking for confrontations. Confrontations are always come to us because there was really, like I say, when I mean that there was nobody else being a person that was challenging the championship of what they were doing out of New York, we were the only one.
The Gangster Chronicles is brought to you by the Black Effect Podcast Network.
Hey, hold up, fellas. I want to talk to our listeners about this new multivitamin that I've been on, Ritual. Now, let me tell y'all, we deserve to know what we're putting in our bodies and why, especially when it comes to taking something we go be taking every day. Ritual's clean, vegan-friendly multivitamin is formulated with high-quality nutrients and bioavailable forms your body can actually use. What you won't find, sugars, GMOs, major allergens, synthetic fillers, and artificial colorants. Plus, the fresh taste and delayed-release capsule design makes taking your multivitamin easy. I got on Ritual because I noticed I wasn't eating the way I was supposed to, and I still don't eat the way I was supposed to. I don't eat the traditional three meals a day. So I love Ritual because what it does, it helps to fill gaps in the diet, you know, with no shady extras. Ritual is a delayed-release capsule designed to deliver high-quality nutrients, including vitamin D3 in just 2 daily pills. You know, and Ritual is made traceable. You will always know what nutrients you're taking and where they come from thanks to Ritual's one-of-a-kind visible supply chain. Now, that's something else right there, but this is what I got for you guys. Get key nutrients without the BS. Ritual is offering all the Gangsta Chronicle listeners 10% off during your first 3 months. Visit ritual.com/GC101 to start your Ritual today.
In the pressure cooker of the NBA playoffs, there's no room to fake it.
When the NBA championship is on the line, every pass, every shot, and every dribble is immediately, undeniably consequential.
The playoffs are the time for the real. Real stakes, real emotions, real sweat, real blood, and real tears.
Trust me, I know what it takes to bring home a championship ring.
The regular season is tough, but these games are a completely different level.
Now is the time when legacies are made.
The best team will bring home the Larry O'Brien Trophy and add their name to basketball history.
Will we see a battle between marquee franchises? or will we see a new champ be crowned?
Which teams will rise from the chaos? Which teams will conquer?
Which team is going to make this year their year?
These are the moments of unscripted, pure entertainment that only happen on the hardwood.
You've waited all season for this. It's time to take it to the next level. Don't miss 1 minute of the action. Tune into the NBA playoffs on ESPN and ABC.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us, wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk. Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't give Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar 20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work. In traffic, so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
There was nobody that was on our level in any of the southern markets. We were the only successful record company to have gold and platinum records at that time. Then Lil Jane them and Rap-A-Lot and them came like a year or so later, but we were the only two. You know, there was no such thing as a situation in Atlanta that had any kind of weight, or North Carolina, South Carolina, Alabama, you know, Mississippi. None of them places had anything. It was all no man's land.
You got to say, Hobbs. See, one thing about me being from the Midwest, man, you know, originally from the Midwest, even though I've been in Cali for a long time now, I think you guys kind of blew it open for everybody, because the Midwest didn't really have nobody. You know, you could get a few people from out of Chicago here.
Right. Uh-oh, I can't hear you still. Okay, I can hear you now.
Okay, you know, when you came, you guys pretty much busted it open for the whole Midwest and the South.
Right.
Because that's when everybody kind of come. The other independent labels came, because you got to remember, it took Rap-A-Lot maybe 2 years before they kind of really popped. You know what I mean?
Right. They had the one album in 90 where it was like the lineup of Reddy Red, Bushwick Bill, Scarface, and Willie D. That was like in 90, but we was like 3 years ahead of them.
Yeah, because that was the incarnation of the Ghetto Boys that really took off.
Right, exactly. And the funny thing about that, our friend of ours out of Houston at that time, Lil Troy, that got had the Wanna Be a Baller record that everybody knows. Mm-hmm. At that time, he was handling Scarface. He actually, you know, the Call Me Mr. Scarface song was his record, and he was trying to get the record shopped around to different people. Scarface was almost signed by Skywalker Records. He had brought Scarface to us and all of that.
Hold on. So is we breaking some history right here? Scarface was almost on Luke Records?
Yeah, for sure. And but Luke passed on the situation, and Troy ended up taking him over there to Rap-A-Lot with Lil J now.
Now, can you imagine the whole shift in hip-hop that would have happened had Scarface wound up on Luke Records? Because you would produce them, Hobbs?
Yeah, I would have been producing them. You know, the funny thing about it, though, is just like I say, his record, you know, his record was on, you know, that Mr. Scarface record was doing really well. And, you know, but at that time, though, people, you know, we didn't know enough about Texas. Texas didn't know anything about Miami. They just knew about the records that was being done. It's just, you know, It's like going to do records with strangers, even though the stranger can, you know, sounds good or whatever. You really don't know how to judge how well they can do or not do because you're not from that market.
So y'all almost pretty much became. Go ahead, because we got a little lag. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, what I was going to say was is that our music was rap music, but it was more dance than it was rap. You know what I'm saying? So we got over in a lot of places that probably wouldn't trip off a hardcore New York rap, but they liked the party aspect or dance aspect to the records that we was making.
I can see that because those records was big. I'm talking about, I don't care if you was a hip-hop head, you go in a club on a Friday or Saturday night and throw that D, one of those cuts came on, it was on a cracking. Because right, everybody exactly. liked the booty shaking. And even today, even to this day, it gets attention.
Right, right, for sure.
It gets attention. When you listen to the music today, do you hear a lot of your influence in it?
I hear my influence in it. But I think what happens is that these young people.
It's the Gangster Chronicles with James McDonald, Steel, and MC8.
In the pressure cooker of the NBA playoffs, there's no room to fake it.
When the NBA championship is on the line, every pass, every shot, and every dribble is immediately, undeniably consequential.
The playoffs are the time for the real. Real stakes, real emotions, real sweat, real blood, and real tears.
Trust me, I know what it takes to bring home a championship ring.
The regular season is tough, but these games are a completely different level.
Now is the time when legacies are made.
The best team will bring home the Larry O'Brien Trophy and add their name to basketball history.
Will we see a battle between marquee franchises, or will we see a new champ be crowned?
Which teams will rise from the chaos? Which teams will conquer?
Which team is going to make this year their year?
These are the moments of unscripted, pure entertainment that only happen on the hardwood.
You've waited all season for this. It's time to take it to the next level. Don't miss 1 minute of the action. Tune into the NBA playoffs on ESPN and ABC.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us, wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk. Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't give Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Okay, there you go right there. There you go right there. So you know what I'm thinking about, man? I want to go back to that Scarface a little bit because Luke almost had Trick Daddy too, right?
Well, he did have Trick Daddy. Trick Daddy basically, there was a big rap contest at the world famous Pac Jam Teen Club, and Trick Daddy won the contest. And winning the contest was to do some songs with Luke on his new album that he was coming out with. So that record Scarred, the Trick Daddy's on, that was part of that deal of him winning that that thing. And he did a couple of more songs on that actual album. But when it came time to sign Trick Daddy for what Trick Daddy wanted, Luke didn't do the situation with him. And he ended up working with these guys that, you know, built up Slip and Slide. Slip and Slide I don't think it existed before Trick showed up over there with some other street cats that you know, did they thing with Slip and Slide, and a lot of the people that used to work for Luke Records ended up working over there at Slip and Slide. So, you know, it's just.
And for people that ain't familiar, Slip and Slide is another influential label. They kind of brought the second wave of Miami in, I think.
Right.
Know, with Rick Rosses and the Trick Daddies and the Trinas and all of them.
Right.
Like, those were all people that you were familiar with. Y'all had access to, like, y'all had access to Ross back then, didn't y'all?
Well, back at that time, you know, those guys wasn't doing anything. They weren't, you know, they was watching us do what we were doing. Trina, her mom was a big hairstylist in Miami. And Trina was young. I mean, she was like a kid at that time when our stuff was doing what it was doing. Because I think once she started doing the stuff with Trick Daddy, you know, I think she was only like 18, 19 or something like that. And that was like in 98, 99. So that was like, you know, 10 years removed from what we was doing. You know, she was in elementary school, I think, at the time that we was doing what we was doing.
For sure, for sure. You know, going back, Hobbs, and you know, y'all got these records, and y'all did a lot of cursing, man. Y'all had a lot of perverted stuff going on. You know what I mean?
Perverted?
You know, I'm talking about in the eyes of the world. You know what I mean? It was
right.
Risque content.
Right.
Was you spooked the first time the police showed up at y'all show?
Nah, because I really thought that they were joking. I mean, I'll put it to you this way. We would never hear about people like Eddie Murphy or Richard Pryor or Dolemite going to jail for doing a comedy act. So why in the hell are they looking at messing with us for doing rap records?
That's real talk. That's real talk.
You know what I'm saying? So it wasn't, you know, if it was something that we were kind of spooked about, we probably wouldn't have went no further with it. But, Luke probably had a better understanding than what myself or Kid Ice or Marquise actually had. You know, we were just rolling with, you know, just rolling with what it was that was happening. We didn't really think that it would get as serious as people was making it, because we knew that we were just making records. We weren't, you know, trying to be on no extra stuff or making political statements or this, that, and the third or whatever. You know what I mean? So it was funny to me. A lot of the stuff, you know, that, you know, my records are actually making this kind of a ruckus, or stuff that I'm involved with is making this kind of a ruckus. I didn't, you know, it's kind of hard to believe at first.
All right, for sure, man. I want to go into these comments, man, and get some questions, man. You know what? My guy Rashad Grice said Ross was down with Eric Sermon before Slip and Slide. He went by the name of Teflon. He's on the Eric Sermon, Eric Onassis album. That is a fact, Rashad. He was messing with Eric Sermon. He was also messing with the boy over at another Texas label. What's my boy's name?
You're talking about Suave House now.
Suave House, yep, Tony Draper and them guys.
Right.
He was down there with them. The Big Willow, he went through his transitions. He worked hard. It wasn't an easy road from overnight, because I remember hearing about him like probably like 8 years before he blew up, you know?
Right, exactly, right.
He was doing a lot of writing for different people. What is the biggest thing that you can take away from the game? Like, what's your biggest contribution you think you gave to hip-hop? Because a lot of people, and I'm going to say this before you answer your question, I want to say this. A lot of people don't know that you are a very dope hip-hop producer. They know you can produce records, you know, dance records and everything, but I don't think they really know that you got some heat, dog.
Yeah, well, the thing is that, you know, back in those days, the only person that was publicized was Teddy Riley back in those days. You know, there was a lot of guys out of New York that was good at what it is that they did, but the groups got the credit for them, you know what I'm saying? And I'm one of those guys that fell into that mold. I mean, basically, I knew that I was good at what it is that I knew how to do. I came from a musical world, you know what I mean? I was in elementary school all the way through high school playing saxophone, so I was already, you know, musically trained about a lot of stuff. So I just took what it is that I learned with music into rap theory, I should say, rap music theory, you know what I mean? So, you know, most of the stuff that I did, you know, I had opportunities to work with, you know, Kid Frost. I did a couple of records on his albums. The No Sunshine record is I produced that record for him. Did stuff, you know, MC8 helped on a couple of the records that I did with Frost. I did stuff with Lil Flip, did stuff with the Ghetto Boys, all kind of different little records here and there. They weren't singles, they were parts of the albums that came out.
Mm. So do you ever feel like you underrated a little bit, Hobbs?
Well, I feel like I'm underrated as far as being publicized. Mm, you know, definitely. I mean, people don't really know who I am. You know, I guess, you know, people know my music. You know, Luke indirectly takes the credit for a lot of the stuff that went on with our records. People would just automatically think that he probably was the one that was dictating all of the stuff that was going on musically because he's the face that everybody knows. So, you know, but beyond that, you know, I guess if you had to put it from the standpoint of publicity wise, yeah, I'm extremely underrated.
For sure. You know what? One of the things that I wanted to ask you about, because you guys, when the group kind of disbanded, you guys were kind of like at your height, right?
Yeah, we were at our height, you know, and which is crazy because I always felt like, you know, any problem that was happening, it could have been solved easily. But, you know, at that time, Luke wasn't trying to solve any problems because he felt like he was the reason that everything was happening and that we just happened to be part of his train, even though we all built the train ourselves, you know what I mean? So everybody had their little job to do with what it was that was happening, you know what I mean? So it's just one of those things, you know, when you're young, you don't really know better how to handle the situation and all of that.
Because you guys were making a lot of money down there, weren't y'all?
Yeah, we was doing pretty good. I mean, people would come from, you know, from up north. Luke would still do these big concerts, like every Christmas. He would do a big concert thing and have a lot of people from New York, California come out to do this thing, and then we would headline the event. So, you know, people were seeing that we was living in a way that the average rapper wasn't living. You know, everybody had their own spot. You know, everybody had their own cars, jewelry, this, that, the third. You know, nobody was, you know, wearing each other's chains and all that kind of stuff. We was living good, but, you know, by us being so far away from California and New York, we didn't really truly know how the other rappers was living.
So, let me ask you this. Is you saying that them other rappers was broke, they had to share chains and stuff, but y'all had, because I know y'all had y'all Slick Rick thing going. You used to come out with a gang of jewelry on.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And, you know, and at that time, you know, the impression of the chains back at that time, you know, it was what they call hollow gold, meaning that the way that it's constructed, it's not solid gold all the way through, not from the standpoint of every nuance of what the rope chain was. It wasn't heavy like that. They were constructed to where they had a decent amount of weight on them, but the way that the chains were constructed, it was constructed like in a U shape. So all of it was gold, 14 karat gold, but it would be like, you know, hollow part, it would be a hollow part of the actual chain. It would be like in a U shape and then formed in the way of how the chain would go. It wasn't okay. All the way full up with gold.
Because I saw y'all, even when we first started working together, I should trip out when you came out, man. And you had the Mr. T look going, you had so much gold on, man. It was just a thing, you know, the Southern cats always love their gold, you know what I mean? And gold tooth and gold teeth and all that, the grill.
Yeah, I never got into the gold teeth thing. I always felt like I would be in the face of white people too much for that to be the case. And, you know, and it also was used as, you know, a form of being slick or being a robber or a jacker. You know, the guys that had all the gold teeth in their mouth back in the early days, those are the guys that you didn't really want to deal with. Mm. Those are the cats that, you know, probably be trying to rob you or take your car from you, you know, carjack you, whatever. That's what.
Yeah, them was the thugs.
Yeah, exactly.
Them was the thugs. So, you know, you did a lot of stuff for Luke Records. I know you was the in-house producer. You pretty much was they Manny Fresh before it was a Manny Fresh.
Right. Well, you know, the funny thing about that is that I've known Manny Fresh that long. I've known Manny Fresh since like 86. And, you know, that's way before Cash Money and them showed up. But Manny Fresh was always doing production in New Orleans. We would be in New Orleans all the time doing shows, and they would open up shows for us and this, that, and the third. You know, it's just funny how this game goes. Manny Fresh did the same thing as what Manny Fresh did for Cash Money. I was definitely doing for Luke Records back in those days.
And what's some of the groups that you brought in that the people know, you know, like what's some of the groups that you produced and brought in?
The Poison Clan, which is JT Money and another guy named Debonair. And, Debonair and them started another group called Home Team. They had a record called Pick It Up, Pick It Up. Let me see, who else? There's a couple of different people, like DJ Toomp was part of MC Shidey's DJ situation. He was one of the DJs, and, you know, at that time, he was like a teenager, but he was extremely talented. He never got opportunity to produce any of the records back in those days, but he scratched on some of the records and things like that. So, who else was back in those days? We had girl group called Anquiet. That's her, you know, government name, Anquiet. They had the song "I Will Always Be There for You." It was a slow song. That was
I remember that.
And then, you know, there would be people that, you know, would just be, you know, pop in and out, you know, do stuff. There was this one guy that used to do our remixes that was from out of New York. His name was Chep Nunez. He was probably like the baddest editor of, you know, doing remixes back at that time. And he was a guy that I definitely looked up to out of New York. And Professor Griff, you know, of Public Enemy, when he had got put out of Public Enemy, Luke did an album on him through Luke Records. So that, you know, crew of New York cats that came down with him, they was cool. There's a bunch of different, like I said, there was a lot of people, you know, we had, you know, actually at that time, Ready for the World, that, you know, did Old Sheila and all of that, they was down at our studios doing stuff too.
Is that right?
Yeah, they, you know, they. What was so funny? They made us, you know, they're from Michigan. They're from Flint, Michigan. So mm-hmm. when they came down, they said, "Hey, man, you guys gonna have the computer set up for to make the music?" And we didn't know what the hell they was talking about. We're just so used to doing stuff, you know, hand to hand combat. But they were used to doing stuff, you know, in them L.A. studios with, like, you know, L.A. Reid and Babyface stuff. You know, they thought we was equipped that way, and we weren't, you know. So it's just little, you know, just little stuff like that. Who else used to come down there? We did stuff with Trouble Funk from out of D.C., good friends with them. Mm-hmm. Stetsasonic, Daddy O and them. They used to come to Miami a lot.
Y'all did that, man. You know, did you ever think how, like, and answer truthfully, you ever think it's a way that the group can never get back together? I know, rest in peace, Fresh Kid Ice. You know, that's unfortunate right there. Do you ever think it's a way that, like, Luke ever come back into the fold? Y'all ever put that back together again?
Well, if Bezos showed up and said he was going to give each of us $10 million apiece, we probably would show up.
Oh, I'm pretty sure.
Anything short of that, I don't know. It's kind of hard to say because everybody is kind of setting their ways about, you know, who would be the boss, how would this get done, how would that get done, and this, that, and the third. You know, if it was, I don't have no problem with working with Mark or Luke. You know what I mean? It's just the ism schisms that come with working with them.
What kind of ism schisms?
Just that. Criticism. You know, optimism.
is that bad, Hobbs? Is that bad, though?
Hey, I wouldn't say it's bad. I think it's bad when people badmouth each other over the internet. And we've never really done that. I haven't done that. You know, I think Mark went in a little bit at one time, but you know, Luke don't really have to do it because everybody feel like he did everything anyway. So
yeah, and the crazy part, Hobbs, is you're the one that really started the group up. You lined all the talent up and you made it all happen.
Yeah, that's true. You know, and the thing is, when, you know, if and when a movie ever shows up, they'll, you know, these will be things that that'll come to pass. You know, it's like people believe what it is that they want to believe, you know what I'm saying? And you know, like that old saying, you can't fight City Hall, meaning that you can't fight everybody that believes a particular thing. You just have to wait for it to go down and happen. Same thing like with this thing with Bill Cosby. The situation with him was already a done deal with the DA. They said they would never pursue anything, but then that guy retired, and then the new DA said, you know, screw what that DA was talking about. I'm going to pick this stuff up, and then put the whole thing in the trick bag that he had to go sit down for 2 or 3 years. That was, there I am. Yeah, someone tried to call, man. Oh, so that's what you mean. You put your thing in airplane mode to where nobody can't call you.
Yeah, man, because my phone be blowing up. You know, my phone ring about 200 times an hour, man. Everybody wants something from me.
Yeah, so yeah, man, you know, I just think that, man, you know, at the end of the day, you know, if somebody was to call and say, hey, man, we need to do a record, you know, I'll probably be the first one there on deck to do what needs to be done. You know, everybody else might be on some other stuff, but I ain't never been on anything with none of the guys, you know. You know, I love Mark as a brother. You know, I looked at Luke as an older brother of mine in the earlier days. You know, so, you know, there's never been no issue like, you know, like it's going to be some on-site BS when people see. If it's ever been that, I ain't never known it to be that.
That's a good thing, man.
Even when you met him, all them years ago when you came to Miami and you met Luke for the first time or whatever, it was never that vibe, right?
No, he came in and did the record for us. He came right on in and did the record for us. It wasn't no issue. He was always cool with me. You know, y'all always some cool brothers. That's why I always ask, man. I think, man, when you're dealing with people that are pretty good people by nature, it's always a chance of reconciliation.
Oh, yeah. It's always, you know. It's always that, like, you know, a couple of years ago, I did some shows with Luke, you know what I mean? But the aesthetic is just different. You know, we're doing the stuff with him now. He knows that it's his thing and he's inviting me in. So it's different than, you know, when we had the group thing where everybody had equal footing. Now it's not equal footing. It's a situation where it's his thing and he's bringing you into his situation, which is way different.
Yeah, so what does Mr. Mix have going on now? Are you still out there making music, man? Do we got a project coming up? What we got going on?
Yeah, man. I mean, you know, the only thing that I'm on is on Instagram at 2LiveMix. I'm always doing little stuff and got some projects, you know, but my thing is the...
Man, cut your phone off, dog. Take it off. Put it in airplane mode. But it's all cool. We almost done.
Yeah, so the thing is, I'm always being innovative, doing stuff with turntable stuff. You know, I go on Instagram and do some little stuff here and there. I got some projects that I'm working on, but I'm real like on some NASA shit. You know what I mean? I don't ever really speak on stuff. You just have to, you know, we didn't know no CDs was coming out until they came out, right?
Exactly. Well, that's why I asked, because I know you missed the top secret. You know what I mean? I got to get you to tell this one story, man, because this is the funniest thing in the world, man. Whenever I tell people this story, they crack up. What happened the time you gave Jay-Z a beat CD? A beat tape?
Oh! Well, I was out on the road with Afro Man, right? I was his tour DJ. And we had a show up in Buffalo, New York. Nas was on the show, Jay-Z, a bunch of other different people, this, that, the other. So I had never met Jay-Z before, right? So when I approached him, I say, hey, yo, what's up? My name's such and such. You know, so I'm there, you know, representing myself by myself. You know, I'm there with Afro Man, but, you know, I'm saying to our crew, you know, me by myself. So, you know, we shook hands, and I had asked him, I said, you know, I would be interested in doing some remixes, like some up-tempo remixes for you, you know, for Rockefeller, whatever. He said, nah, I don't want none of that. You know, Trick Daddy and Trina and them is down there. Why don't you do some remixes for them? I don't know if he felt like he was trying to diss a motherfucker or if he was trying to be informative. I really didn't know how to take it, but he helped, but he gave me some radio drops and all of that stuff after he said it. So, you know, people be on their own thing, you know what I mean? And
yeah. I just thought that was funny, you being nice in this and your explanation, but I take that though. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm saying though, but he didn't say it like it was like, you know, like he was trying to be on some thug shit about it. He really kind of, I think he, you know, looking back at it, I think he was just trying to be, you know, informative of, you know, what it is that I could do.
Well, you know what though, man, actually, and that's what I tell people. I see a lot of the comments on the internet of people talk about different people. Hov is actually a cool brother.
It seemed like it, you know.
You know, Hov is actually all right brother. You know, he do a lot of good stuff, man. He just kind of to himself, he in his own world, you know what I mean? And when you work $1 billion, I guess you can be in your own world, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like there was this thing. Anybody that watched the Don King movie, there was a line that one of the guys said, hey, Don, how many bodies you had to step over to get to where it is that you at? And he gave him a shitty ass look and got in his limo and took off. So, you don't really know people's story and why they move the way that they move. You know what I'm saying? So I try not, if it ain't personal with me, I try not to take it personal at all. Everybody moves the way they feel like they need to move, man.
You know, before we go, I got to ask you this, man, because you was around a lot of people before, you know, like as you mentioned, before they became who they are today. And you know, you talk about Toomp. Were you around Toomp when he first hooked up with T.I.? Because T.I. was really his artist, right?
I don't really know the story. I'm going to just give you the Toomp version because, you know, it's the Toomp version and the T.I. version and then the truth. So I don't know what the truth really is, but I do know that at the time that you know, T.I. was dealing with Toomp, that he had got dropped from LaFace. He was signed to LaFace. He had got dropped from them, and I guess him and Toomp started working together. And you know, Toomp had, you know, Toomp was always a guy that was always selling tracks in Atlanta, this, that, and the third. So he had a certain level of respect with people there, and he also knew the guy Jason Jeter. So what ended up happening is he introduced Jason Jeter and T.I. to each other. So when they start getting a little momentum and getting a little street cred with the records that they were doing before the Atlantic deal showed up, what happened is you know, Jason Jeter and T.I., for what Toomp tell me, they did the 32 fake out. You know, they went up to Atlantic on their own and cut the deal and told Atlantic them that Toomp was just the producer of the music, not a third member of what the situation was.
Yeah, because Toomp made them out again. Like, T.I. was done.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the story is. I'm not, you know, from the Atlanta Chronicle. I'm just saying. That's what was told to me back then.
Yeah, I know being politically correct. You know what I'm saying? Mr. Politically Correct.
Yeah, man. Fuck being politically correct. I'm just saying what it is. I don't have a dog in the fight of any of those guys. I don't really know T.I. I don't know Jason Jeter at all. Wouldn't know him if I seen him on the street. You know, I just know Toomp just based off of the fact of what we did, you know, at Luke Records. And we're still good friends to this day, even though when I try to call him, I can't get him on the phone all the time. But, you know, but if I was to see him out, I mean, I think the last time I seen Toomp in person was at Fresh Kid Ice funeral, and we talked for about an hour then. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's, you know, what's funny, it's almost Chris, you know, Kid Ice fourth anniversary of his death. So, you know, and he doesn't get a lot of props to talk. He was like really the first legitimate rapper that was out of the South that actually was successful. You know what I mean? And he's of Asian and, you know, Asian descent. And, you know, he's like Chinese, like a Chinese Jamaican. He's from Trinidad. Mm-hmm. You know, he got black and Chinese blood in him.
Mm, that's dope, man. And how did his death, man, when he died, man, was that a real big blow to you?
We weren't on the best of terms at that time, but it was, you know, it was a trip to me because I knew that it had to do everything to do with the decision that he made a long time ago without, you know, him not getting his shoulder amputated. See, a lot of people thought that, you know, he had his arm in a sling, like it was a publicity stunt or something like that. Like everybody said, that guy's arm is always broke. His arm is always broke. No, his arm was paralyzed. He couldn't move it. And he was scared to get the his shoulder to be made into a prosthetic. So he just left it hanging. And instead of it just hanging and swinging, he put it in a sling.
Wow, man. So that, and that came to affect him later on.
Right.
That's sad, man. You know, do you ever feel like you didn't get a chance to get closure? Because like you said, y'all wasn't on the best of terms when he died. Do you ever wish you could have had that one more conversation with him?
Well, I think some people you have closure with. You just know where you at with them. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, I won't go too much into it, but I know that me and him, we weren't never to the point where I couldn't be in the room with him. And then also at the same time, you know, he's handicapped. What the hell what kind of props you gonna give for chin checking somebody that's handicapped? Even though he might need the chin checking. You know, it's one of those situations where, you know, you're kind of handcuffed by your morality.
Mm-hmm. Hey, you know what's funny? I think you mentioned morality. And we live in an era where everybody is so sensitive. You almost can't even tell the truth no more. You know, people get offended. You know what I mean? Do you think Two Live Crew could have existed in this current climate?
I think Two Live Crew could exist in this climate, but maybe not necessarily the way that how Luke was handling some things with the journalists and people like that. You know, you pick and choose who you like. You can't really do that. You have to be politically correct. And he didn't really feel like he had to be politically correct. And he kind of lightweight feels like that right now. He still feel like he can be an irritant when he gets ready to be. And, you know, that's just him. You know, good or bad, he just feels like that's his approach. He would, in his defense, he would always say, you know, if it was me, I would do such and such. He never tried to coerce me to say this or to do that. He would just say, if it's me, he would always be on that. So he does, you know, he's one of them type of cats that he'll walk in the shoes that he walks in, good, bad, or indifferent. Mm-hmm. He's just that type of cat. And, you know, I guess to a certain degree, you got to respect that, I guess.
Yeah, for real. You know, one last question. I promise this is the last question, bro. who's your biggest surprise out the South? Because you saw a lot of people earlier. Who's the biggest surprise to you? Like, wow, he really went and did it.
Out of the South? Oh, wow. Probably Rick Ross.
Why would you say that?
Because he was with Slip and Slide and them when they was in their heyday. And he never had a hit with them. You know what I'm saying? And I never even knew that he could rhyme as good as he did until the Hustlin' record came out and I heard it in the nightclub and I knew who it was. But I didn't really, you know, I said, wow, he did a thorough transformation. And, you know, he sounded extremely convincing. He was definitely Miami vibe, Miami attitude that hadn't showed up yet. You know, even though JT Money had, you know, Miami vibe and this, that, the third, but his thing was like next level, you know, Pablo Escobar type thought process. We knew, you know, JT never came off as being you know, the ultimate dope boy. He never came off that way. He was the ultimate Miami, average Miami street guy that knew how to get money and, you know, this, that, and the third, but he wasn't viewed like he was on no Pablo Escobar type stuff like how Rick Ross portrayed himself, but we all knew guys like that in Miami. So, but Rick Ross was never viewed as that guy. He came from an area where some of those guys come from, but he encompassed that whole thought process and morphed it into what people know as that's what, you know, Miami Cat is on.
Well, you know, one thing I will say about Rose, because he's a cool dude. All my encounters with him have always been like, he's a cool dude. You know what I mean?
Right.
Real cool dude. Ain't funny acting, man. And I think, man, you know, I get happy for dudes like that, man, because, you know, he fought the fight. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And he took it, you know, and this is the other thing. You can never take the fortitude from somebody. If a person gets an opportunity to be able to make something pop, you still got to have the mindset to be able to, once you're in it, to be able to cultivate it and make it into more. So with that, I can say that, you know, it's kind of like self-proclaimed. He's the biggest boss, and he's showing it up in a lot of ways, owning 15 wing stops and this, that, and the third. And, you know, he getting money that people don't even think that he's getting. And, you know, anybody, maybe people don't really realize how significant Evander Holyfield was and the kind of house that he had in Atlanta.
Oh, yeah, Ross is getting his money. Ross is doing his thing, man, and I give him his props. You know, a lot of people may not get into, but it's all entertainment to me. You know, it's just like somebody that write a movie. You know, that's his thing. He talks about, right, like you said, the next level Scarface, Pablo Escobar type of stuff. But, you know, he's living in Evander Holyfield's old house. That house is huge. A lot of people don't know that house looks like a shopping mall.
Right, exactly. And, you know, and the funny thing about it, he got it up off of him. So how do you just get it up off of him? You had to have it. You had to have the money. But maybe the money ain't coming off from, like I said, from the rap stuff. Maybe, you know, him and his family was able to cultivate all of those wing stops. I think they got like 15 to 20 wing stops.
Oh, he's definitely doing his thing, man. But, you know, I appreciate you, big bro. And, man, we got to have you on here again, man. And, you know, get ready for everybody out there in the L.A. area. Get ready for me and Mr. Mix's ultimate booty shaking party. It's going down.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, that concludes another episode of the Gangsta Chronicles podcast. Be sure to download the iHeart app and subscribe to the Gangsta Chronicles podcast. For Apple users, find a purple mic on the front of your screen, subscribe to the show, leave a comment and rating. Executive producers for the Gangsta Chronicles podcast are Norman Steele, James McDonald, and Aaron MCA Tyler. Our visual media director is Brian Wyatt, and our audio editor is Taylor Hayes. The Gangsta Chronicles is a production of iHeart Media Network and the Black Effect Podcast Network. For more podcasts from iHeart Radio, visit the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
In the pressure cooker of the NBA playoffs, there's no room to fake it.
Every pass, shot, and dribble is immediately consequential.
The playoffs are the time for the real.
Real stakes, real emotions, real sweat, blood, and tears, real legacies.
Which teams will rise from the chaos? Which teams will conquer?
Which team is going to make this year their year?
You already know when and where to find these moments of unscripted pure entertainment.
Don't miss 1 minute of the action. Tune into the NBA playoffs on ESPN and ABC.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk? Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't give Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar 20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.